VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 420, recorded on April 12th, 2016. The 420th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 253rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. You know, I'm surprised I was able to say that without laughing because I just realized what episode this was.
Oh, 420. Yeah, I didn't think about that either.
Blaze it!
And, you know, it's funny, if I delayed this podcast another week, we could have actually recorded this on 420. Anyway, last week we didn't have a podcast. We did have a podcast, but it was totally screwed up. All the audio was screwed up. And it wasn't that great a podcast anyway, so I said, screw it, we'll just trounce it and forget it ever existed. That's the way it is. But we have a lot of podcasts here. So what games have you been playing, Scott? And please don't tell me it's Stardew Valley again.
Okay, I haven't been feeling very well the past weekend or so I haven't really played anything. Resting. So I'll have to be playing maybe like Torchlight or something in the future. So something action adventure RPG.
Torchlight and not Torchlight 2?
Finish the first one, then I'll play the second one.
Okay. Actually, I have... Oh, what's the name of that game again? The free-to-play one. Path to Exile? No. Something like that. I tried it a little bit. It seems very Diablo-y. I just haven't gotten really back into it.
Okay.
At some point, I will. Paths of Exile, I think it's called. And it's free-to-play on Steam. So, no, you haven't been making your farm and finding someone to marry and...
Well, you said not to say Minecraft, so...
I didn't say Minecraft. I said Stardew Valley.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't sound robot-y anymore, so I think that's all cleared up. I haven't played too much Stardew right now, or too much of anything else. So, like I said, wasn't feeling so great.
Yeah, I learned that Stardew Valley is done by one guy. Everything. The music, the... Everything, and it's took him 6 years to make.
That's pretty awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah. So, what? How about you, TJ?
I think you know. Dark Souls 3, baby.
Oh, really?
That game is... Oh, my God, it's so good.
Yeah, I got a few messages on Twitter saying that the Dark Souls 3 servers were up. So, I figured something was up.
I had it for review, so I've been playing it for a while, but, God, it is... It is the best parts of Dark Souls 2 mixed
and
with
Bloodborne.
Some great, mixed with some great lessons from Bloodborne.
Right, that's what I've been hearing. At least the mixed part. I mean, if you're into Dark Souls, I'm pretty sure people are loving it. It's not my sort of game, but then again, you know, a lot of games don't please other people. So, I mean, what are you playing it on? First off,
playing it on PS4.
Okay.
And yeah, I get the gripes about the From Software games. They are difficult, and Dark Souls 3 is sort of difficult. But I think it eases you in better than any other From Software game in that vein has done before, and trains you. It trains you for what's coming, and it escalates properly. It's difficult, but it's not unfair.
Okay, well, that's good to know. It isn't that it's hard. That I consider it hard. It's just that, you know, it's not my type of game. You know, I mean, if I'm going to play a roguelike, I'm going to play something like Diablo.
That one's not a roguelike, though. Everything is always in the same place, so it's really just a matter of memorizing the patterns and memorizing where things are, which is a vast and massive game, so it's kind of hard to remember where every single thing is going to be, but you can, like, going through an area... Like, you might die, but you'll learn lessons about where you are and where you're going and what's going to come out, and you can plan for it.
Have you done a 2-hour speed run? I just read it over the weekend that some people did 2-hour speedruns of Dark Souls 3. And again, with speedruns, I'm thinking, why bother? Why are you doing this? Just to brag? This is some sort of e-peen, you know? Because to me, if you're going to play a game for 2 hours, then you really didn't invest any real time in it.
That's especially unfortunate for Dark Souls 3, because that game is freaking gorgeous. Like, there's so much scenery, so much to explore. It's really the kind of game that you can get so much out of it on one run and then realize you missed a whole bunch of stuff on a second run and find all sorts of new things. It's got that kind of replayability where it favors the explorer.
Right.
I like that kind of game.
Well, expound on that, Scott.
I like games where you can explore and find things a second or third or fourth replay, or just, you know, find a different angle that you hadn't realized before or noticed. Something that just there's always more to see. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like just a real inviting kind of game.
So, I've been playing Plants vs. Zombies 2, and that's about it. But I'm really looking forward to buying Quantum Break, because I'm hearing a lot of good things about it. For one thing, it actually includes a TV show in which you actually have a live-action team show that does what, depending, it actually makes, you can, here's the thing, is that you actually watch the villain, and you can have the villain make a choice of how your next level's going to go. For example, is he going to go the route in which, you know, he tries to win people's hearts and minds over that, and, you know, and all this stuff? Or is he just going to clean out the warehouse and leave no survivors? And the game changes depending on what choice you made for the villain. So, whoa.
I really do like that about Remedy. They do that a lot with their games. They did that episodic thing with Alan Wake.
Yeah.
And they did that a little bit with the first and... did they do the second, or did they just do the first Max Payne?
They just did the first one, if I remember. Or the first two.
Right, but they still did that sort of, like, episodic sort of like, meta-narrative that was just really, really cool and charming.
Could you tell Alan Wake was a little bit inspired by Lost?
A little bit. It was Stephen King, it was all the sorts of things.
No, it's just I love the episode bumpers in Alan Wake, like, boom, next on Alan Wake.
Dun, dun, yeah. Dun, dun.
I don't know if they do that here, but they definitely have a TV show. There are 4 shows with 5 chapters in each show. And the way it's set up, they could easily do each DLC is an entire season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the fact that they have live action actors performing these TV shows, and they're all different depending on what you do as well. So how you act, the show changes depending on how you behaved in it. And I'm really looking forward to it. The only complaints I've heard about it is A, it's too easy, and B, it's a bit of a collectathon, you know, if you want to get all the lore. You know, you could speed run it and finish it in like 6 or 8 hours. But but you can do multiple playthroughs so that the stuff that you didn't pick up, you can pick up the next time through. And there's an incentive, of course, to play it again, is to make different choices, you know. So I guess they're taking a page from The Walking Dead and making Quantum Break. I hope, I haven't played it yet, I hope they have the same episode bumpers last time on Quantum Break.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to see. That's what I'm looking forward to buying. I can't right now, but I will. I mean, it looks great, too. They said it's absolutely beautiful. So we'll see. But other than that, my game playing has been pretty boring.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news, and we have some juicy news going on. First news comes to us from Destructoid. Former head of Rockstar North sues the developer, alleges $150 million in unpaid royalties. I have the phone going. It's not my phone. Okay. Former head of Rockstar North sues developer, alleges $150 million in unpaid royalties. This comes to us from Destructoid. Back in January, Leslie Benzies resigned from his position as president of Rockstar North after taking a 17-month sabbatical. For those who don't know, Rockstar North are the people who take care of Grand Theft Auto. As it turns out, this isn't exactly how it happens. Benzies insisted that Rockstar willfully deceived them, including withholding a massive amount of of money that Benzie says he's entitled to. Recently, Benzie's filed a lawsuit against Rockstar, which alleges that the developer owes him in $150 million in unpaid royalties. According to Benzie, Recently, Benzie's filed a lawsuit against Rockstar, which alleges that the developer owes $150 million in unpaid royalties. According to Benzie's, this stems from a royalty agreement that he signed with Rockstar founders Sam and Dan Houser back in 2008. Ostensibly, this agreement was a reward for Benzie's contributions to the studio, and it brought him into the upper echelon of earners at Rockstar. It made Benzie's a, quote-unquote, Rockstar principal and ensured that he was compensated identically to the Housers. In September 2014, Benzie's arranged to take a sabbatical. It was planned from September 1st through March 31st, 7 months' time. In December, Take-Two Interactive decided not to allocate royalties to Benzie's anymore. The royalty agreement plan didn't expressly state that Benzie's was entitled to royalties while on sabbatical. On March 23rd, 2015, Benzie's sent a demand letter to Take-Two for unpaid royalties and for his promised, quote-unquote, exact financial parity with the Housers. On April 1st, according to Benzie's, he attempted to return to work at Rockstar North, only to find out that his access to the building had been revoked. A security guard let him in, but Rockstar North building manager insisted that he leave the premises. On September 2nd, Benzie sent a notice of termination to Rockstar, a letter that framed his exit from the company as for good cause, or as firing without cause. This, in theory, and if true, would make him eligible for compensation still actually owed to him. Contractually owed to him. Benzie's believes this treatment was undue and that he's a victim of a ploy by the Housers to have him ousted. The Benzie's lawsuit cites, quote-unquote, mounting resentment on behalf of the Housers, leading them to deceive him. He also infers that the company's royalty allocation committee that determined Benzie's was no longer entitled to royalties may not be a group that actually ever met. Benzie's lawsuit for $150 million in damages was met with a countersuit from Rockstar. Filed just yesterday, Rockstar alleges that a breach of contract by Benzie's. Rockstar maintains that one of the terms of the royalty agreement plan was the committee's decisions are final and binding. Benzie's is supposedly in violation of that by contesting the decision and continually demanding his exact financial parity. You know, this sounds a lot like what happened with NCSoft and Richard Garriott.
What happened?
Well, Richard Garriott decided to spend $30 million to go into space, and during that time, NCSoft dissolved the MMO. And I have it right in front of me. I shouldn't forget this. Oh, Tabula Rasa. And tried to cheat him out of his money. NCSoft lost big time. Richard Garriott got his money, but the MMO stayed dead.
I mean, it's one thing that they pushed him to take a sabbatical, but 17 months? That's a year. That's almost a year and a half.
No. He planned a sabbatical just from September to March, which is October, November, December. That's 6 months. However, they stopped paying him his royalties during the sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that Benzie's claims that they sort of pushed him into the sabbatical too.
Okay.
Like I saw something today that he is making a claim that Houser pushed him towards it, like tried to get him to do it from the get-go.
Right. So here's the thing. Now they removed it. They said they didn't pay him his dues. While on sabbatical, or his royalties on sabbatical, he wanted the money that he was due for his sabbatical. And apparently they used that as a pretext to say, well, you're contesting that we're not going to pay you during your sabbatical, and therefore you're not going to get any money at all. I have to wonder, because, you know, what if he said, okay, now pay me after my sabbatical, if they would have done this anyway?
It is altogether a rough time, a clusterfuck, if you will, because Benzie's is one of the original dudes that brought Grand Theft Auto to fame, and if this is the swan song for Benzie's and Rockstar, which it almost certainly is, then that's probably going to have quite an effect on the series.
I was just saying that I'm getting a deja vu moment with the creator of Metal Gear and Nintendo, where he got ousted, and Kojima, yeah. And this just, it looks like bad PR for Rockstar here, because there's a whole back deal dealings and backstabbings and all that crap, and it just doesn't feel like these guys are being treated right for their IPs that they came up with.
Well, you know, it's almost a certainty that Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be announced at E3.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to wonder if they're trying to cut him out of this so that they don't have to pay him for that.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe. And, I mean, at this point, the Grand Theft Auto formula is established, so...
Watch, he darts over to Volition and does Saints Row 5.
The real point of conflict here is whether or not Benzies took the sabbatical on his own or whether he was forced into it. That's probably what will... I don't know if that can be proven in court. My brother is a lawyer, and he would probably have much more to say on this, so I might have something more. I might talk to him and talk more on this next week, but it's really going to be a sticky situation of whether or not he was forced into that sabbatical or he took it willingly and still expected pay.
Well, you know, with Richard Garriott, it was in and out. I mean, NCSoft was definitely in the wrong, and no matter how they tried to spin it, they got busted. It'll be interesting to see what happens. If you're making $150 million in royalties, I mean, how much did Grand Theft Auto make? I mean, that's a healthy chunk of change right there.
Yeah.
I mean, why not just pay him the $150 million and then tell him to go f*** himself and go away? If you don't want to share, then don't share in the next thing. And I'm pretty sure that Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be a big hit, too. I don't see that series slowing down.
It's like you said at some point in this article, it seems like there was tension building. This was probably, I mean, leading up to a sabbatical in and of itself, there's got to be a reason why a guy takes a year and a half off from his job.
Well, first it was just 6 months, and then when they blocked him from going back to work, it became a 17-month sabbatical enforced.
Yeah.
You know, 6 months, and then you were fired for 11 additional months, only they didn't exactly fire him. They just denied him his money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a... Legal issues like this and are always going to be, like, just a cluster of contracts and stuff that only certain types of lawyers are going to be able to sort through that and figure out exactly who's in the right, who's in the wrong, and nobody... It's a lot of jargon that a lot of us and other people aren't probably going to understand.
Yeah, it's just... a really messy deal, and it just makes them look bad, I think.
Definitely it does. It's you're canning the cornerstone of your franchise.
Mm-hmm. Just like Nintendo did to Kojima.
Nintendo.
I'm sorry, Konami did too.
We have plenty of things that Nintendo has done. Where I think you're thinking about Nintendo canning that woman.
No, well, there was that. Yeah, so I got that a little bit confused. I meant,
I get what you mean.
Konami, not Nintendo. I'm sorry, Konami got rid of Kojima who made the Metal Gear Solid series. Sorry,
right. So.
Since we talked about that last week. About Nintendo firing that woman, IGDA has come out and blasted Nintendo, and it should make sense because they're they represent independent developers. You know, not that Nintendo's ever been friendly towards developers. Since then, we've had a gun company make a Nintendo light gun that looks like a Nintendo light gun. Yeah, that's not a formula for disaster or tragedy right there.
They're not selling it. They just want to say, hey, look what we made. It's stupid.
They're selling it on the site, though. And you just know some kid's going to think it's a light gun or a toy.
Yeah.
You make a gun look like a toy.
Yeah. It's just really stupid.
And then, you know, some fool's going to leave the gun loaded because idiots leave guns loaded, you know. That's the first rule of firearms right there. You know, you never store loaded weapons ever. And
yeah. I mean, it certainly puts off the exact wrong message about how seriously to take firearms.
You know, this could be an argument against violence in video games in a weird way. Look, they're trying to make a video game video games violent by actually having a violent video game controller.
You already had the zapper and the and that cannon thing for the SNES, and I know Sega Genesis had their gun.
Well, light guns are different, though. They don't look like guns.
Well,
they're making a gun look like a light gun.
Yeah, I know. And it's just that little kids have been shot with more fake or different
real guns.
Fake guns that looked real.
Yeah. Next, they're going to make a laser tag gun so that you accidentally grab it instead of the actual laser tag gun, you shoot someone. Oops. Anyways.
I agree with Scott to some point. There's an entire industry of airsoft that prides itself upon making full-scale replicas of historic weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah, the light gun was never a historical weapon, though.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, in a way it is, but in a whole different...
No, unless thing. You really wanted to kill that dog from Duck Hunt.
Well, there's a nostalgia there for that zapper. There really is.
Yeah, just make a plastic duplicate. Actually, just get an actual zapper. They're $5 at any video game, what's it called, nostalgia store. You can buy one for $5, if that. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Oculus apologizes for Rift shipment delay, taking steps to speed delivery. From Game Informer. Last week, Oculus announced that it had run into a problem sourcing a component for its recently released Rift VR headset. Last night, the company issued more concrete delays for many of its customers. Prior to last night, customers were unable to see projected shipment times on their orders. These began appearing prior to communication from the company. The Oculus subreddit is filled with comments from frustrated, hopeful owners who are now subject to a month or more of delay. Oculus has issued a statement regarding the extensive shipping delays, apologizing to customers who are now waiting an additional 6 to 8 weeks. The company says it has increased production to catch up. The company has also says it hopes to beat the estimates it issued last night to pre-order customers. Oculus believes that most Rifts will ship in less than a 4-week delay from the original estimate. The apology stated in part, "We're delivering the Rifts to customers every day, and we're focused on getting Rifts out the door as fast as we can. We've taken steps to address the component shortage, and will continue shipping in higher volumes each week. We've also increased our manufacturing capacity to allow us to deliver in higher quantities, faster. Many Rifts will ship in less than 4 weeks from the original estimates, and we hope to beat the new estimates we've provided. If you order a Rift today, shipping estimates now peg delivery in August. That's a month later than the estimate you placed in order yesterday."
I actually was at a tech show on Thursday, and I actually got to use the Rift a bit. And it was for the Minnesota Vikings, who are doing VR stuff with their new stadium. It's interesting. And, you know, there was stuff that I suggested they hadn't thought of, like, what about having a VR camera for the press conferences that you could actually feel like you're at a press conference? That sort of stuff, you know. But this... You know, how long have they been working on the Rift now? I mean, like, since 2013, 2012?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a while. I mean, if you want this thing to really work and be a good product, and this is not – this is almost like the Wright brothers with their plane. You know, this is going to take a lot of refinement, so I expect this to be – something, you know, like the Model T, maybe more accurately, it's going to have to go through a lot of processes to get to be a really more streamlined product.
What, you're not satisfied with your Virtual Boy?
Yeah, that's one of my points right there, exactly.
The other problem is that the Left brothers over there at Valve are making that HTC into a workhorse. The HTC, from everything I've been hearing...
HTC is a company. They also do something. The Vive is the name of the... Because what I really want to get at some point is an HTC Windows phone. I think those are the best.
Mm-hmm. From everything I've been hearing, though, from friends and people that have tried out this stuff, the Vive is really head and toe above the Oculus Rift right now.
Well, you could call it the HTC Vive. I mean, it should just be the Rift. Oculus is the name of the company, you know. I don't know. It's just a matter if we really need VR right now, to tell you the truth. I'm just like, I'm not going to attempt it. I need to buy a new computer for one, and for another, I don't know if I want to play video games in VR. I mean, I don't play games that are very VR-ish. I mean, maybe if I get Elite Dangerous or something.
I'm not going to lie. I pre-ordered the PSVR.
Okay. And, but it's cheaper. And
yeah.
Do you have,
for one, it's cheaper.
Well, by $100, yeah.
For one, it's cheaper. For two, I have a PS4. And for three, I mean, they're going to develop for it. And the fact of the matter is, even if there aren't a lot of PS4 games for it, it has been said to be able to be used with... They're working on getting it ready to use with PC as well.
Yeah, the problem with the PlayStation VR, though, is that some people in the know have said it looks like shit.
Yeah,
because
it does.
The thing is that it's not trying to do as much as you would with a Oculus Rift or a HTC Vive, you know. It's trying to do console-level games, which is one of the impetus for them trying to get a 4K machine out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably because of the PlayStation VR.
I was thinking you could probably play Minecraft on PlayStation with the PlayStation VR. Maybe see if you could try it out just to see if it works well or not.
Or you can get the HoloLens and do it, because we know that works with Minecraft.
Yeah.
I mean, augmented reality, VR, virtual reality, you know. I mean, that's the other thing about the Vive, by the way. It does both. It does augmented and it does virtual reality, which is why it's $800.
Yeah.
Because you're getting the best of both worlds, right, in the same headset. And all these other complicated stuff that you have, it has more parts and bells and whistles to it. I mean, the thing is, I see people crawling around on the floor, going through a virtual gate, and I'm thinking, do I really want to do that in my room? Really?
And what in the end, the PSVR could be just the same old story as the Kinect, minus all the versatility.
Well,
but
it could be the same old story with the PlayStation Eye, which it's using, and the PlayStation Move, which I think it's also using. I mean, Sony has warehouses full of eyes that they can't get rid of. Might as well incorporate it into the VR.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll see what happens when it comes out.
Yeah, play Dark Souls 3 in VR.
Oh my god, I would be terrified.
Yeah, that's another thing, is that a lot of people have played those horror games, played it once, were scared, and didn't want to play it ever again, you know? Because there's such a thing as too much.
Whoa. Yeah, what was I saying?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see, you know, about this whole VR technology thing. I've seen posts on Facebook about the porn industry is having no problems diving into this.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the porn industry is what drives technology.
Yeah, what drives technology. It's what,
there's a reason why we did VHS instead of beta.
Right.
There's a reason why DVD was accepted. There's a reason.
So I don't think this will be a fad. I think this will be the start of the virtual out. Really, the start of the virtual reality technology. It's just going to take a while to really pick up.
You know,
pick off.
I'm gonna splice in the internet is for porn in there. The internet is for porn. The internet is for porn. That's why it was born. Porn, porn, porn.
Classic Avenue Q reference.
Yeah, that's the only song from that show I actually like. I mean, Avenue Q is just boring, early 20s malaise. That's all it is. Well, you guys are in your early 30s or approaching it. You'll probably identify more with Avenue Q, but I don't give a shit.
I'm actually approaching my early 40s.
So, yeah, I mean, if you listen to Avenue Q, you'll, the disappointment that, you know, you didn't do what you want by your late 20s, boo-hoo-hoo. Boo-hoo-hoo. The next couple of items are going to be
all
about the Nintenders. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The Nintendo NX might include Wii U ports. This is from Cinema Blend. Okay. My Nintendo News is reporting that a popular leaker named Emily Rogers has had posted up some tweets, all of which had been deleted preceding her account going private, where she let loose some interesting information. The contents of the tweets were archived by a French-Canadian gaming website, Mon Nintendo, where
Mon
Rogers
Nintendo,
stated,
monsieur. Oh, we are from Quebec. We're Quebecois. We have Mon Nintendo. And we have free healthcare.
Anyways.
Where Rogers stated in her tweets, I don't know much about the NX's hardware, but I do know 5 or 6 games coming to the NX. There's a lot of Wii U ports coming to the NX. I know 4 of them, and that's why I'm wondering if NX will even bother with BC or not.
That's backwards compatible.
Oh, okay. Fine. Following the series of tweets, Rogers' account went private. Segment next believes that the few games making the leap from Wii U to NX could be Super Mario Maker, Splatoon, Super Smash Brothers, in addition to upcoming release of The Legend of Zelda. Now, I know a lot of these are obvious, but if you work for a company, non-disclosure is non-disclosure. We all know there's going to be a Mario, a Zelda, a Metroid, and probably Star Wars. But you don't go and...
She's not working for the company. She leaks stuff. Not. She's done this before. Okay. So the interesting thing there is The Legend of Zelda, which a lot of people believe was going to be released sometime last year. But Nintendo decided to hold it off and wait for the NX just so they can make that a version for it for that too. Sort of like what happened with Twilight Princess, you know, with the GameCube and the Wii.
Hmm.
But I find it interesting that Nintendo is not going to do backwards compatible. And as Scott knows, that you know every single device that Nintendo released and at launch was backwards compatible, completely backwards compatible with the previous machine. You know, well, maybe not the NES and the Super Nintendo, but
right,
I mean stuff.
They weren't.
I mean
true.
Stuff like the Game Boy to the Game Boy Advance, the Game Boy Advance to the Game Boy DS.
Those
DS
were all cartridges.
3DS.
I didn't expect. Well, actually, the Game Boy. I'm sorry.
GameCube. The Wii U could run anything from the GameCube, and the Wii U. I mean, the Wii could run anything from the GameCube, and the Wii U could run anything from the Wii. So this is the first time in a long while they're not going to have something that's backwards
probably
compatible.
Probably didn't get enough profit off of it. I don't know, but I don't really feel that it's that much of a cost to put in there. But they probably just decided that it was this time, and now they're. I mean, I hope they actually make it more competitive. I mean, if they're going to get rid of backwards compatibility, they might as well really go all out to try to compete against the Xbox and PlayStation that will make a real next machine.
Well, guess what? That's a perfect segue to the next item. 4K Forbes claims the Nintendo NX will likely output 4K, and this comes to us from Forbes magazine. According to Forbes magazine, quote, NX leaks are in the vogue right now, and an indication of interest in Nintendo's new console is heating up. There's some more stuff floating around on Reddit with more verification than before, still far short of anything hard. Here's what's being said right now, that the Nintendo NX will be capable of playing current-gen ports games, it'll run an x86 architecture, there'll be support for a second screen, and will back up data in the cloud, and it jives with the information that the Nintendo could well run at 4K. Like all NX leaks, it's best to take this as speculation at best. Well, once supposed it's possible that the poster might actually have advanced knowledge, there's really no way of being absolutely sure. We've seen plenty of bogus NX information floating around there, and this could be well more the same. The concept of a 4X NX is not new, however, and as far as speculation goes, some of this stuff feels pretty kind of safe. The article goes on to say that while the Wii was able to avoid needing high resolution thanks to the fad of the Wiimote, the Wii U was perceived as backward, and Nintendo can't afford another flop. So right there, we're talking about what is Nintendo going to do to prevent. Because everybody did think the Wii U was... Remember what the Wii U was rumored to be? The Wii HD. And it was supposed to come out earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when it finally did come out, it was like, whatever. Big whoop. Because it wasn't better than... It came out, I believe, after the 360 and the PlayStation 3, and still was not as technically advanced as those two machines.
Yeah. So, listeners can't see it, but I'm doing the air jerk off hand at 4K because the fact of the matter is, it's probably. I mean, if they're planning on announcing it at E3 and then releasing it sometime this year, I can't imagine that it's going to be. Even if it does run at 4K, it's not like it's going to be running at 60 FPS. Do you really think that it's going to be running at 60 FPS?
I'm going to tell you something. I went to this tech show right here in New York, and I also got an email later from not Sony. Oh boy, who are the people who do Android? It's RCA, right? They're releasing 55-inch, basically what are gigantic Android 4K tablets, 55K, and these things, the lowest one, the 50-inch one, is going to be $500. For a 4K smart TV. And by smart, I mean it's basically a gigantic Android tablet that's in 4K and it's 50 inches. It runs all Android software. It does all this stuff. And it's only $500. And that's the less premium. The premium version of that is $600. And the best one, the 60-inch premium version, is going to be a mere $800, I believe. That is ultra cheap. So... Right. What we're seeing is we're going to see very inexpensive 4K TVs coming out, which is going to benefit Nintendo if they're thinking about coming out with the NX, right? And if it's 4K, it's definitely going to help Microsoft and Sony if they're going to go through with the 4X devices too. 4K devices too.
Right. I just, even if all of these devices can do 4K, I still don't know I seriously am in doubt about whether or not the technology will be able to keep up with that.
Have you ever watched a 4K TV?
I have not.
Oh God.
I haven't either.
Oh God. Let me just put it this way. For one thing, it has four times as many colors, you know, and it fills in the colors if it upscales really well. When you watch something in 4K, your jaw drops because you put your face next to the printer, it still looks like a photograph. I mean, 4K is where it's at, and, you know, I'm going to say right now, if you want to try it, buy it. $500, a 50-inch TV that's 4K, no-brainer. It's not like one of those UHDs, you know, that have the curved screen that are several thousand dollars, you know. You're still going to have glare if you have the flat-screen TV like that, but still... I mean, 4K. I can't watch 1080p that much anymore. It's too bad. It's not good enough for me.
The problem, though, is that.
Oh, did I mention they're also 140 megahertz too?
Yeah. I mean, that sounds great and all, but the problem is that until they get into a standard where they're making games in that style. It's going to look an awful lot like if you took a Nintendo game from, like, 1988 and put it on a 1080p screen.
Well, I will say again, like, my games are upscaled, too. And they upscale really nicely. I mean, if it's 1080p, 4K just doubles everything, you know, and makes it look even better than it should. It's sort of like what we were talking about in the podcast that actually 2 weeks ago, we talked about how God of War 3 was upscaled from PlayStation 2 to PlayStation 3, right? Same thing here. So I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to get into 4K, get in on the ground level. Because then you'll have, if you don't, you'll have this sort of Me Too-ism, you know? Oh, finally, they're doing 4K. So...
I'm not entirely sold on it yet. I think the technology is great, and I think they're going to move in a hell of a direction with it, but I don't think that... I think the technology there, but I don't think the media is there yet.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough, like I said, enough... It's almost like that Sega commercial that they did for Nintendo, where it was like, Nintendo's out, and it was like, the SNES had just come out, so they had a very short library. So it's kind of like that little camera pan through all their games, which was like just a short little thing. But eventually, you know, they'll get there. But again, it's like VR... with 4K, it takes time to really for all of this to take off.
I have a feeling that your mic is on the table. Am I correct?
It's right in front of me, yes.
Okay, so what happens is every time you pound the table, we're getting the vibrations
from it. I haven't touched the table.
Okay, well, we're getting pounding sounds. Anyways.
I'm not pounding anything.
Oh, there, just pound it again. Anyways.
That was not a pounding.
Look for our show. Go ahead.
I was just my chair lightly touching the like the leg or something.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I do want to make a special note is that I've started posting actual articles on GamingPodcast.net to supplement the podcast news. There used to be a lot of news on GamingPodcast.net, but then I had to do news on other sites and all that stuff, so I wasn't able to post anything. I'm going to start posting things now. For example, I posted the article about the teaser for Titanfall 2 being released, and apparently they want to go the Pacific Rim route and have swords. So...
You mean Zords like mechs or swords?
Actually, I'm going to tell you, the sword looked like one of those BFSs that anime characters use that are longer than their bodies, you know, those flat, long things. It could be Zord. Well, the mechs themselves would be Zords, right? I don't think you... Oh, imagine if in Titanfall you could do that, in which you did a Voltron-like thing in which all the mechs stuck together and made one gigantic kaiju monster. Bang!
Yeah.
No.
Unless I can pull a dagger out that I can blow into like a flute and summon a mecha dragon, I don't care.
So one thing we do know about Titanfall 2, we might as well get into that, is that it will have a single-player campaign. And it's also, of course, multi-platform this time. It's going to be PC, Xbox One, PlayStation 4. And, you know, one of the best things that happened to Respawn was that there was a tremendous amount of hype for Titanfall, because it was an Xbox One quote-unquote exclusive. I know they don't include... There was a PC version too, but I don't think anybody included that. I still have Titanfall. I haven't played it in a metric while. I haven't played Destiny either. I'm surprised I haven't played Sunset Overdrive in a long while too.
Destiny is the kind of game that gets really boring really fast if you don't have other people to play it with.
Yeah, that's happened to me. Especially since you could actually find yourself running through these places with level enemies 20 points higher, and you can still survive, but it feels like you're still underpowered. I'd rather they just kill me quickly than allow me to survive and run through their things and just have to watch out for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the reasons why The Division is still popular is it's Destiny done right. You know, I think you could still do improve. There's a lot of griping about The Division 2, which are easily fixed in the next whatever game they're going to come out with. Yeah, but, you know, like I said, the biggest thing about any game of that ilk, whether it's a roguelike or it's an MMO, is that the loot drops have to feel like they mean something. And that was the biggest crime for me with Destiny. The loot drops, I didn't give a shit about. They weren't interesting. You know? And by the way, Borderlands at least got some guns that I really liked.
I will say that, is that it doesn't matter if your game has a bajillion guns if 700 million of them are crap.
I mean, one thing I heard from somebody about The Division is that you pick a type of gun that you really like and you stick with that type of gun. Don't bother, doing a wide variety. Just find the gun that feels right to you. And use that gun, and level up that gun alone. You know? And maybe I should have done that with Destiny, I don't know. But that's what they're saying about The Division.
It's a similar thing in Dark Souls 3. It really does serve you well to find a weapon that suits your style best, and just level it up, refine it.
Let me guess, you want a sword that's 12 feet long, that's twice as high as you when you walk around.
No, actually, if it depends on the character I'm playing. If I'm playing my mage, I like the rapier, because I love the fencing style, the pokey, and the ability to just extend out and stab and pull back real quick.
Okay.
On the knight, I like the standard sword and shield, because I like the ability to be able to parry enemies and set up critical attacks.
You know, I
did a similar thing in Fallout where I found the a spray and pay gun, and of course my 10 millimeter that I picked up in the beginning of the game, and both those weapons have served me very well for my game style.
For me, since I was the stealth monster,
mm-hmm.
I kept a lookout, and I look out for the gun that does double damage if they don't see you. Yeah. And also, there's another gun, and then when you have stealth, it does another double damage. You have 4x damage. If you get it right, then buff the hell out of them and make them silent. And I got a sniper rifle that was that way, and a pistol that was that way. I had a shotgun that, in case they got too close, Myrlurks, you know, that could deal with them quickly. I also, you know, I haven't tried it because I finished the game. You know that stupid gamma gun that's only supposed to hurt organic.
Yeah, humans? I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, I did get a really nice legendary drop of a laser, which takes care of what are they called again? The synths, not the first synths, but those hunter synths, the top level synths.
Yeah.
You know, that takes them out really well. And those guys are tough. Those guys are the worst enemies in the entire game, even worse than Deathclaws, because Deathclaws are stupid. You could just jump on top of something and shoot at them from a high angle, and they can't do anything about it. These guys, you know, just warp all over the place.
Yeah.
So
they're jumping around, being annoying. I just want to ask TJ, what kind of variety of weapons do they have in Dark Souls? Is it just like medieval Europe weapons, or do they go into other...
They go crazy with weaponry in that game. There is everything from like a you can use a straight up dagger, which one of the greatest things they included in Dark Souls 3 is stance, like sword art stances,
mm-hmm.
where if you double hand a weapon, or if you're using a shield that allows for a weapon skill, if you use your offhand strong, it allows you to do a special ability with that weapon. And for a long sword, it might be like jumping at the enemy and stabbing up under their guard if they're using a shield. For a dagger, it might be like doing a full turn around them after they charge you to set up for a backstab. And there's so many different types of, like, yeah, it's a lot of European-style weapons, but there's also, like, katanas, there's hammers, there's maces, please, sickles, scythes, just so much cool stuff. This Dark Souls 2 had a massive armory, and this game has a bigger one.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, that according to the developer from Software, it says this is going to be the last we're going to do with this series.
Oh yeah, and so. it's the perfect send-off. They really did. They took everything they learned from everything they've been doing for the past, what, decade now, and they put together in the most perfect way.
Scott, it's not exactly a trilogy, because everything started with Demon's Souls.
Right.
And then it was Dark Souls 2, then Bloodborne, and then Dark Souls 3. There's also a 2D version of Dark Souls. It's not related to the games at all, but it's been getting some positive reviews, you know, as being, you know, it's basically turned Dark Souls into a Metroidvania as well.
Are you talking about Hyper Light Drifter?
I don't know the name of it, but I know that Yahtzee reviewed it. I don't think it's Hyper Light Drifter, though. I'm not sure that's the name of it. I don't know. I'd have to check. But yeah, it's a 2D Dark Souls. 2D platforming Dark Souls.
I like that, the sound of that. I mean, I don't see anything
wrong. Oh, no, it's Salt and Sanctuary, that's right.
You know what's great? Is I sort of see, like, in a lot of ways, old school, like, Castlevania post Symphony of the Night is sort of like the 2D Dark Souls. And a funny thing about that is that in this, in the Dark Souls 3, in the second area you go through, you can find armor and a whip that straight up makes you look like a Castlevania character.
You mean what's his face? Not Van Helsing. Oh fuck, I forgot his name.
The Belmont.
Simon Belmont. Simon Belmont. Right.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like straight up like
a lot of Belmonts.
I would say this one is more like Richter Belmont from the Dracula X.
But does Simon Belmont talk like this? Hi there. I'm just going to admire myself.
He doesn't. I want to.
What's the matter? Don't you like it?
No, I don't.
Are you talking about the awesome vocals of Symphony of the Night?
No. I'm talking about the freaking cartoon back in the 80s.
90s.
That narcissistic Simon, which was not my image of Simon at all.
Oh, come on, Icus. Didn't you like us, that cartoon, Icus?
Oh, are you talking about Captain N?
The Game Master.
Oh, God.
And then Game Boy joined. I didn't really watch it because I was an adult then, but, you know, it's just hilarious watching it in that it was so bad.
It was.
And yes, especially the Power Glove, it was especially bad.
Every character in that show was voiced with the sort of late 80s, early 90s, I'm going to say this, quote-unquote, ratitude.
Yeah.
That...
Except the crossover with Zelda, because Zelda was a cartoon as well.
That was a little bit more serious, yeah, a little.
Excuse me, princess.
He didn't say that, but he did get really pissed. What's it called? Zelda actually kissed our hero. I forgot the name of the hero, the human hero of Captain N.
Yeah.
Well, Captain N, I guess, is his name in the thing. She kisses him right in front of Link, and Link and... The entire series of Legend of Zelda was trying to get a kiss from her, and she does it with this guy right off the bat. You could just imagine what he's thinking.
You son of a...
And they talked about it, a nostalgia critter. He went, "What the... bitch?"
Sitting over here with blue balls, I've been... fighting this pig man for ages.
Not to mention, in that episode also, Zelda went with a belly dancer outfit. She went all naval. So anyways, the game that is called Salt and Sanctuary, and you don't collect souls, you collect salt.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. That looks great.
Yeah, it's literally a 2D Dark Souls. The problem is that it's very... What happens is that... if you get knocked back, you get hurt, which is not something in games like Castlevania. You know, when you got knocked back, you were hurt by the blow, but you weren't hurt by the fall. In this one, you get hurt by the fall.
Like if you get knocked to the ground.
Yeah, something, you know. It's just you get knocked back like you do in Castlevania, although it's a lot worse in that game because it's following Dark Souls rules instead of Castlevania rules. That's the only real problem people have with it.
Souls rules, in which case gravity is half of the problem with it.
Not your friend, yes. But again, you know, if you really, really like Dark Souls, try out Salt and Sanctuary. If you want a little Castlevania mixed in with your Dark Souls. So, yeah. Anyways, what?
I think I really am going to start up a new character at some point in Dark Souls 3, get that armor and get the whip and straight up...
See, that's how you know you really like a game, is when you start over with a new character. I mean, with me and Mass Effect, you know. Although, I will say this, I don't really start off with a new character. I start off with the old character and just play through again because I'm enjoying the story, you know. I'm doing the same thing right now with Alpha Protocol, and I cannot believe people did not like that game. It is mystifying to me that people did not like that game.
There's always somebody that doesn't like something.
No, but this is like everybody played the first hour and said, eh, whatever. And the story is really good.
Was that the spy RPG?
Yeah, that was a spy RPG. And, you know, I knew that some people didn't play the game because they said, oh, stealth and pistol are worthless. Just start off with an assault rifle. But they did not play this game. In Alpha Protocol, if you max out your stealth and max out your pistol, you can play the entire game like that. It becomes extremely easy. Not to mention, it is the only way, really, that you can get the, do a pacifist run the entire way through. Unless you do your fighting, too, because if you max out your fighting and you get Iron Will, bullets literally clang off you as if your skin was literally steel. And you just knock people down. Boom, boom, you're down. Boom, boom, you're down. Boom, boom, you're not killing them. You're just knocking them flat on their butt. And just so you know, there's one part of the game in which you have this 80s-obsessed Russian mafia kid. And his entrance is just so 80s, it is beyond awesome. I forgot the name of the song. They wanted to do the Final Countdown, but it wasn't the Final Countdown. But it is, I have to look this up because it is beyond cool. But yeah, and the thing is, I bought it twice. And then I bought it again on Steam because it was $1. And the problem is that, see, the other games, I kept on losing the, they have a very annoying copy protection. So at least on Steam, I didn't have to deal with it. But yeah, it was just, turn up the radio. Turn up the, by Autograph. Here's the thing. Do Alpha Protocol, Turn Up the Radio. And you'll see what happens in that part of the game. It is just wild. It is so far from what the rest of the game is. It's just like you're transported. It's sort of like when you're playing Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 and you're doing Infinity Mode. They start doing a song. Oh, jeez, I forgot the name of it. It's a more famous song. But maybe it is. What's it called? The Final Countdown. I don't know. Oh, no. It's the theme from Top Gun. It's one of the themes from Top Gun. It's Highway to the Danger Zone. Yeah, they start in the middle of Plants vs. Zombies. Tell me that's not cool. But here's the funny thing, is that if you're with the zombies, your ship is a flying cat. If you're with the plants, your ship is a wooden triceratops. Anyways, we will see you next week, and we will have a better show, a longer show at least.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.
And we will see you next week. You know, actually, your enthusiasm over Dark Souls 3, TJ, I'm thinking if you have a friend who plays Dark Souls 3, we'll have an entire Outcast episode of you discussing Dark Souls 3 with him.
I'm telling you, I'm really thinking about doing a Castlevania run, just grabbing that armor and the whip and just taking that all the way through the game.
I will say this, I found that Symphony of the Night is now available on Xbox One, because, you know, every time they do the backwards compatibility, it popped up. Symphony of Night. So, I've never played Symphony of Night, and when I got it for the Xbox 360, I played like one and a half levels or something like not much of it. And I'm thinking maybe I should try and do an entire run through now because I never played it.
If you want to hear bad dialogue, get ready to laugh.
Oh, I already know that. I mean, here's the thing: nothing will ever beat the dialogue in the original Typing of the Dead, or actually House of the Dead. I have Typing of the Dead. Same.
I love the Symphony of the Night game. I think we need. I want more games like that. You know, side-scrolling Metroidvania.
They have that. I also never finished Shadow Complex either.
Mm.
Speaking of which, but you know the dialogue in House of the Dead. Oh my God! It's G. Please save me.
You cannot defeat. Me now, because I killed Agent G.
The dialogue. No, I am not exaggerating when I talk. These were definitely they were definitely Americans who did this dialogue, even though it was a Japanese game. I'm wondering if they had to pick out some guy off the street. You look white. Do you speak English? Good. I want you to record some lines for us. I don't care if you're mildly autistic. I want you to do these lines for us. The acting is that bad. Oh well. I mean,
We can do an entire outtake episode of bad dialogue from old games.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Nah, but we're gonna do an entire we'll do an entire episode of TJ discussing with a friend Dark Souls 3 and strategies and what you've discovered lately. Just I have a feeling that the discussion would be very intense. It would go over an hour, and people would actually want to hear it.